A new survey finds many small business owners are feeling buoyant. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. What trade war? What clouds over the global economy? Many American small business people are feeling more optimistic, according to a new survey out today. There was an uptick April to May in people saying now's a good time to expand, with 62% reporting they were hiring or trying to hire. 54% said they were having trouble finding qualified people. For more, let's turn to Mark Lucchini, Chief Investment Strategist at Janney Montgomery Scott. Thanks for doing this.
You're welcome. Good morning.
All right. Once an hour, I talk about the trade war, and there are concerns that it could become a drag, not just on the global economy, but the U.S. economy. There's a new survey of small business folks. What are they saying?
This morning's report from the National Federation of Independent Businesses actually saw that their optimism level rose on a month-over-month basis to the highest in 7 months. And subcomponents of that report showed plans to hire, capital expenditure plans, expectations for better sales, all increased. So actually, taken at face value, you would think that that would be a condition that would lead one to believe that the economy is in pretty good shape, considering obviously the breadth of small business owners across the country, and obviously two-thirds of employment is occurring in the small business community.
Another thing we're tracking, the NASDAQ Composite Index going up again today. Technology stocks have had a very good five-day run, the best since 2011. What do you think's going on?
Well, I think a couple of things. Tech stocks came under a bit of pressure, particularly some of the names like the Amazons and the Googles and the Facebooks last week under concerns over regulatory influences. And so I think you're seeing a rebound on that, coupled with the fact that these continue to be bought as growth stories that tend to perform pretty well as interest rates continue to stay low or melt and expectations around a Fed rate cut hovering at least 2 to possibly 3 over the remainder of this year tend to be fuel for growth-oriented companies. And tech and their growth rates that are much more predictable than more highly levered companies tend to be the beneficiary of that kind of sentiment.
That is the Chief Investment Strategist at Janney Montgomery Scott, Mark Lucchini. Thanks so much, Mark.
You're welcome. Thank you.
A bipartisan group of senators wants to make it harder for foreign lobbyists to hide their dealings with U.S. officials. A proposal would retool how the Department of Justice handles people pushing policies on behalf of foreign governments. This would beef up the law that was used in several of the prosecutions in the Mueller probe, including against former Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort. Marketplace's Renata Sego is following this. Renata, what's the proposal here?
This group of senators wants to give the DOJ more power to get documents from any lawyers, consultants, or lobbyists who may be working on behalf of foreign governments. The DOJ would also be able to impose steeper fines if it uncovers unregistered foreign agents. This new bill would basically rewrite the Foreign Agent Registration Act, or FARA, which some lawmakers say is really weak. It'd be the first big change to FARA since the 60s.
What do these lawmakers say is wrong with this FARA?
It hasn't really been used. That's the thing. Congress originally passed FARA in the 30s to prevent Nazi propaganda from influencing U.S. policy. But lawmakers say prosecutors have only used it in 15 cases since the 1960s. And half of that is just from the Mueller investigation. The senators say there are too many loopholes. They want to require a government study that would close those loopholes. But this is just a proposed bill so far. It would need to pass the Senate and House and get the president's signature to go into effect.
Renata Sego, thank you. You know Marketplace is a source you trust for information about the economy and how it affects our lives. We're also a nonprofit news organization, and we're counting on listeners like you to support this kind of journalism. Any donation helps, but if you give $30 right now, it'll be matched dollar for dollar by another one of our generous supporters, the Candida Fund. Become a Marketplace investor today at marketplace.org, and thank you.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
Over the last week, we've been reflecting on the legacy of China's brutal crushing of the Tiananmen Square protests 30 years ago this month. China's leadership at the time ignored the calls for democracy, but there were some concessions around the edges, including allowing more choices on what people could listen to, watch, and buy. That change has been good for some international businesses, but others find they're still shut out of the Chinese market. Marketplace's Jennifer Pak explains from Shanghai.
My first experience here in China, I was teaching English at
In 1985, Kerr Gibbs, a native Californian, was working at a university in Beijing. His monthly salary was about $100.
It was too much money for me to spend.
Too much?
There was nothing to buy.
Back then, employers provided the basics, room and board, bicycle, even a thick winter jacket.
It just was not a consumer economy at all.
That changed a lot after the Tiananmen protests, says UC Irvine professor of history Jeffrey Wasserstrom.
They got a lot more lifestyle choices, and they got a lot more choices of things to buy.
Here in Shanghai's central shopping district, there's a Taco Bell, a KFC, and a Haagen-Dazs. You can see Nikes, iPhones, and Buicks. But U.S. firms are not allowed to compete freely in some sectors, says Gibbs, who's now president of the American Chamber of Commerce in Shanghai.
Hi. I want a cappuccino.
The reality becomes apparent when we grab some coffee nearby.
Note how we're paying. I mean, between Alipay and WeChat Pay, you basically don't need to have your wallet. You don't need cash.
But you can't use Visa or MasterCard either. The Chinese government hasn't granted licenses to U.S. credit card brands.
Meanwhile, China UnionPay, which is the local equivalent, they have 100% market share. And by the way, I was just in Washington, D.C. I saw China UnionPay in our nation's capital, in the gift shop.
Gibbs says he's concerned about limits on U.S. tech firms, too. Google, Facebook, and Twitter are not accessible to the average user in China. And foreign cloud computing firms are heavily restricted.
Cloud, AI, big data, this is the future of business.
They also happen to be sectors dominated by American companies, but they feel locked out of the world's second largest economy. In Shanghai, I'm Jennifer Pak for Marketplace.
One benchmark for interest rates in America, the 10-year Treasury yield, is up this morning, 2.16%. I'm David Brancaccio, and this is the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.